Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast where we dive into the people and ideas shaping the future of HPC and AI. I'm your host, Antonia Maher, and today I'm thrilled to be speaking with Jay Lofsted, who is principal member of technical staff at Sandia National Laboratories. I first got to know Jay through Women in HPC, and then not too long ago we met in person at ISC, and since then he's been someone I really look up to, and not just for experience in science and HPC, but for the way he thinks about careers, mentorship, and unexpectedly gelato. So Jay, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thanks for the kind words and thanks for having me.
Perfect. So I would say let's start at the beginning. What first drew you to HPC and what was kind of your aha moment when you realized this would become your career?
That's a long roundabout story. I'm a first generation college student, and because of that, I had nobody in my extended family or even really friends that understood the whole process of grad school or even a PhD. Everything was about getting an undergrad degree and get a job. And I tended to be fairly bored in like high school. And because of that, it was very much a, I'm going to find enough things to keep me busy. And as long as I get good enough grades, which nobody could define, I was fine. So I got out of undergrad with only a 3.2 GPA. And because of that, nobody at the school ever talked to me about grad school. And I had been interested in trying to go and get more education, but I didn't know what the process was. So I went and said, I got to work for a while and make enough money to be able to afford to go to grad school. And in the process of that, I ended up working first for Siemens Energy and Automation, doing programming packages for industrial controls that run factories. And after Siemens, I went to what ultimately became McKesson HBOC and then just McKesson, and that was hospital automation software. So all of the things that clinicians use, but nothing that the FDA regulates. And the last thing I did there is I ran a startup for them. I had the CTO and his assistant discover that through my dad, who sat outside their offices, that I was planning to leave the company. They said, hey, come talk to us before you go. So I said, sure. I went and talked to them. And this was in 1999. And they said, we see that other companies are integrating their applications through a web browser interface. Do you think that's something we could do? And I looked at that and I said, yeah, I think I can do that. Then both of them left the company and left it in my hands. So I had to build the team and then run it to do the whole product development, working with the customers and everything else like that. Since the company fronted all the money, they, of course, wanted complete control and eventually pushed me out of any leadership position so they'd have their people they could trust in control position. So at that point, it was time to look for another job. And I couldn't even get an interview because I only had a bachelor's degree. At that point, it's time to go back to grad school. And that's when I discovered that PhD programs are free tuition and you get paid a stipend. That's like, why didn't anybody tell me this 10 years ago? So I ended up going and getting into the master's program first, which I discovered later was really the right thing to do because I had to reestablish my academic context. And after doing that for a couple of years, I did several side projects for faculty, and then they became the ones that wrote my letters of recommendation to get me into the PhD program. I bounced around the PhD program a little bit. I started in learning sciences and discovered that I loved to teach, but I wasn't that interested in the theory of teaching. Then I went to software engineering and discovered I liked building systems, but I wasn't that interested in all of the different processes that people came up with to make it easier for people to build systems because they were more people processes. They weren't technical kinds of things. And then I discovered systems, and systems was about building large complex systems. And I'm like, okay, this is where I need to be. And I was fortunate that my advisor had a connection with Sandia, and Sandia was looking to fund two Georgia Tech students. And the goal was to basically pull us into Sandia's world as far as computing goes and support us through our entire degree. So that's how I got my initial connection both with Sandia and HPC through grad school. It was not something I had planned. I'd always loved science, and discovering, hey, I get to work on computing, but at the same time support science was a huge bonus. And then the subsequent additional piece is of, I don't have to work on a for-profit motive. I can actually work to try to make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And I found a place that I'm very happy to work in because it gives me the peace of mind as well as the global impact that I like to have in the kinds of things that I do.
Yes. And I mean, you talked about your background now a lot, and I think this could also be something probably that led you to the sweeter part of your life and gelato. So, I mean, your technical work is obviously super impressive, but what also really stands out is how much you've done to build the community in HPC. And yeah, as I said, one big example is your famous gelato group. And yeah, maybe you could tell us something about how that tradition started and why ice cream.
Okay, so for me, I'm fairly serious about most of the food that I eat. Not that I'm a foodie and that I want fancy food. I just want really high quality food. And mm-hmm. oftentimes really high quality, simple food is often the thing that I gravitate towards the most. On a vacation in Vancouver, British Columbia in 2017, I discovered there's a gelato shop there that the owner went to the international gelato competitions in Italy and won. So I thought, mm-hmm. I have to go to this place. So I went and it was fantastic. And the next year, Trilce Estrada from University of New Mexico and I were running the student programs for IPDPS. And I told her on the first night, I guess, I said, I want to go to this gelato shop because it's so good. And I explained the whole thing. And I said, do you want to come? She said, yeah, let's invite the students. So the next time we got all the students together, we told them, we're going to skip a session. We're not telling you should skip a session, but this is what we're going to go do and why. If you'd like to come, you're welcome to come. And this collection of students that were largely sitting by themselves and not really interacting much with each other all decided to come with us. And it was about a 5-block walk there. So they talked the entire time there. They talked the entire time in line. They talked the entire time they were eating. Then they talked the entire time back to the conference. And then from that point on, they were tight. All of them were talking and interacting together. And we realized we had discovered magic. So that was our first clue that this was a great community building kind of thing. For the next several years, it was very much an informal thing where we would just sneak up behind one of our friends or the students and such and just whisper to them, ice cream. Mm-hmm. And they would usually laugh and then they would say, sure, let's go. And we would oftentimes end up skipping a conference session and get a group of 6 or 8 or 10 people and go get ice cream or gelato, whatever was available in town. And again, talk the whole time. We always tried to make sure we had a balance between students and regular professionals so that we could kind of pull the students into talking to us more so that we became part of their network. And at the same time, they became comfortable talking to us no matter what our reputation was to them. We didn't want them to be uncomfortable saying, oh, this is a fairly famous person. I don't want to interrupt them. And then October of 23, Radita Leem, who's just about to graduate from RWTH in Aachen, she emailed me as a regular participant of these and said, we need to make an ice cream club for SC. And I thought about that for a week. And then I said, no, I'm going to do something different. So I created HBC Gelato Group on LinkedIn with the intent of that being our way that we just communicate to people saying, hey, we're going to go get ice cream. And if you'd like to come along, come along. And it exploded. We were stunned at how fast it grew. So by the end of 23, we had 100 people. And as of today, it's at about 295 or so. And we have two simple rules. The first one is treat everybody as a peer, no matter what your level is. If you have ice cream in your hand, how can you not be relaxed and willing to talk to anybody? And the second one is we don't want anybody treating it as here's a sales event for me to attend. So we don't want people mm-hmm. to go in just as a recruiter trying to talk to people, to pick people up as potential employees or somebody coming in wanting to have people come to their booth. If that happens as a side product of the conversation, that's fine. We don't want to restrict that kind of thing, but it's more a matter of it's intended to be purely a social event for equals to be able to communicate well.
Great. I mean, now you took one of the questions away from me, which was about the rules from the Gelato Group.
Yeah.
And I mean, you already talked a bit on why the boundary is important to you, and I totally agree with you. And now that we've talked already a bit about community building through the Gelato Group, I know that you've also been a real advocate for mentorship across the field. I mean, for example, you've taken on the role on the Global Mentorship Advisor for Women in HPC. So I would also like to talk about mentorship for a moment. And
sure.
Whether someone is just starting out as a mentee or stepping into the mentor role for the first time, maybe you have some advice that you would give to them to make the most of it.
Okay. Yeah, I took over. So I think it was Sunita that was running the Women in HPC Mentorship Program before COVID. And then everything got shut down during COVID. And since I had been involved with Women in HPC since year two as a strong supporter and advocate, they said, hey, can you take over the mentoring program? And I'd be happy to. So that's how I ended up getting involved in it, because I try to make sure that for a lot of these things, I stay in the background because I don't need my own prominence to be pushed forward through another organization. I want to help other people, particularly those that are growing, get more exposure. So if I can be behind the scenes and support somebody that is up and coming that wants to try something out, great, I'm all there. And I don't need to be visible at all. I just want to help them do things in a way that they have confidence and are comfortable, rather than trying to guess and be terrified the entire time. So for me, mentorship, that's really a part of it, is that it's for the mentorship, it's not about you becoming visible, helping someone. It's about helping somebody else become visible in spite of yourself being invisible. And for me, the mentoring side of it, if you're not learning something at the same time, there's probably something wrong with the relationship. And mm-hmm. I don't mean that in a bad way, but I mean it in that you're not exploring or pushing enough to figure out what the boundaries are. So I've recently was talking with one of the students I was working with, and she asked me if compilers were still a valid research space. And that's something I hadn't really thought about at all. And then the two things occurred to me is that LLVM came out and it really changed the quality of error messages and gave us a new compiler infrastructure that people really like. And then the Rust programming language came out. Between the two of them, it's like, okay, maybe there is life left in this area, because there wasn't anything that really was coming out before either of these. So that's the kind of thing that I was able to pull back. Another big one that I pulled back was working with so many people that are 20 or 30 years younger than me. I get to see through the group of them what their priorities are and what their preferences are for how they want to live, how they want to work, what kinds of things are acceptable. And that helps drive me to be able to work with them more effectively. So like at Sandia, we were having discussions about how we need to change our culture. And that was one of the things I brought up, is that basically everybody in the room was at least in their late 40s. And if you're going to try to help bring this to the new generation, you need to talk to the new generation. So mm-hmm. that message got through, and we ended up talking to more people and got a broader picture on things. From the mentee side, the big thing is that you can't ask, how do I do X? Because that's making assumptions that you know that X is the right thing to do. And for me, I want to make sure that the things I learned in doing software engineering for basically 10 years as my job was, you can't just ask somebody, how do I write this line of code? Because they're going to ask you, what are you trying to do? And then you have to explain to them the entire context of, this is the goal I'm trying to reach. I think this is the right next thing to do. I got stuck on this part and I'm trying to figure out how to get past it. And at that point, then they understand what you're trying to do, and they can either say, oh, this is how you fix that, or they'll say, that's not the right approach. And the same thing's true on the mentoring side, is that if you really want somebody to be able to help you, you have to be able to give them full context for what kind of thing you're trying to get help with, so that the person can kind of see the whole person and say, oh, this is what you're trying to do, and that's what you think is the right next step. That may or may not work, but here's some other suggestions that may be beyond your experience that can get you to where you want to be. And let me help you with those. So for me, it's very much as a mentor, learn as much as you can help, as much as you can, as well as helping. And then as a mentee, make sure you're asking things in as broadly and completely a way as possible so that you can get the help you want.
Yes, I completely agree. I mean, I've been one of the people that got a mentor via this program, and I can only tell everyone to do the same. It really helped me a lot. And if we're already talking about this now and having you here, is there maybe some advice that you would give people from like underrepresented groups entering HPC, since it can be a bit intimidating from the outside? So maybe you can share some thoughts. Yeah.
So I was students chair for SC21, and I learned a lot about the people who were students at that time through all of them. For SC22, I was inclusivity chair. And in the process of that, one of the things I learned is that underrepresented groups are in a safe environment, very comfortable talking about difficult issues. But if you ask them to step forward, many of them, for very legitimate reasons, would prefer not to, because for so long they've been beaten down or said, oh, you're one of them kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And I very much understand that that's a limitation that people feel, and they don't want to be pushed as an outsider saying, oh, you don't belong here kind of thing. Instead, what you need to look for are people who are willing to support you and help mm-hmm. you along the way. And at the same time, make sure that they're doing it so they're not parading you around saying, look at who I'm helping, but make sure that they're doing it trying to clear the path for you and then let you be the one that ends up coming out in front. Oftentimes that requires going and talking to people ahead of time and saying, I have this great person you need to listen to when they mm-hmm. come up. I'll let you know when they're there, but don't dismiss them. They may not either look like your typical HPC person, or they're too young, or whatever other qualifications would potentially cause discrimination against them. But that's really what I try to do for people that are not in the traditional HPC background. It's big thing is look for people who can help you rather than trying to do it on your own. You may be successful on your own, but it's a much harder road.
Yes, I can agree. Yeah. I totally agree with you. To wrap it up, I mean, you've seen a lot of efforts around diversity and inclusion in HPC mm-hmm. and AI, and you already said a few things that work, but is there maybe one thing that you would say is a first step, for example, that people that are already in the space could take to make people feel more welcome? And
the thing that I find most attractive about this research environment is that in general, everything is completely evidence-based. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is you can challenge anybody's idea on something as long as you can bring evidence to support why you think your challenging idea is correct. And what I would encourage people who don't agree with the status quo is come with evidence, and even if it's in private, talk to people and say, I'm not sure that's right because I see all these other things. Mm-hmm. And if you are somebody that's leading one of these efforts and somebody comes to you and says, I don't think that's right because of these things, listen to them. Because you may be able to disprove all of the things they've brought you, but they've mm-hmm. gotten up the bravery and the confidence to be able to come to you, and they want to have this conversation. So be open and listen to everybody, because the next new idea may come from a completely different place. And the only way we're going to hear it is if we listen.
Yes. Great. Thank you so much. I can only say I agree again. Maybe one last question to end on gelato.
Yeah.
And I would say it's important. What's your current favorite ice cream flavor, and has it changed over the years since you're a foodie?
Okay. that's actually the almost a leading question, I would say, because my advice to people is go to a place that is all natural. That way, you know, there's mm-hmm. not a lot of like weird chemical colors and things like that. And then mm-hmm. shop by color. And look for the thing that is the most unlike anything that you've seen before. And I found three flavors that I would say are among my favorite right now that I had no expectation of just because of buying ice cream that way. The first one was in Denmark. I found this soft yellow color, and I had no idea what it was, but it was an absolutely beautiful peach. And then another one that I saw was this kind of medium gray, completely unappetizing. But that ended up being in different places, different flavors. In this place in Cyprus, it was black vanilla, which is vanilla beans that have been aged an additional like 3 weeks in sugar. And it gives it a really richer flavor. So that was really nice. And then the other one is black sesame. And then the last one was, it's just bright purple. And bright purple is fun. So why wouldn't you just eat bright purple? And that ends up, if you're in Hawaii, it'll end up being taro most of the time, but sometimes ube, the sweet potato. And so I very often, if it's available, we'll get ube and black sesame.
But I mean, it tied back to trying diverse things, and it makes sense. And yeah, I have to say that's all the questions I have for you today. Jay, really thank you for taking the time to speak to us. And in my opinion, you really make the field a better place. And I'm sure our listeners will really enjoy this episode. So yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I enjoyed it very much. I would encourage people, if you want to get involved with the HPC Gelato Group and understand when we're having our next outings. For the most part, it's when I'm at different events, and I'm at 12 or so conferences a year. But other people are starting to have their own meetups as well. But go to LinkedIn and join the HPC Gelato Group. The only requirement to joining is you have some HPC-related connection. So I had a couple of people who wanted to join that were gelato companies, and I said, no, this isn't really the place for you. So come join us, find out when we're going to go, and we'll see if we can break our current record of 58 people that we had in South Africa last year. So that's our next goal, is to try to beat that.
Perfect. Great. We will make sure to contribute to that and put the link below. And yes, also thanks everyone for tuning in. Hope to catch you next time.